We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tony, it's Barry Rosner. Let's go. The people have asked for you, Barry.
Nobody asked for
me. I'm not kidding you. I'm looking at the text screen right now. Please get buzzed, Barry, on the radio. Give us drunk Rosner. 630 texter, more Rosner. So, and these
it's been,
are,
it's been a long time.
These are all different texts.
I've not been on this radio station.
630 texter, Barry is drunk. I don't know that to be the case.
No, it's not. I had one Bud Light.
Oh, then you're good because, you know, your capacity is...
Is
ridiculous.
About 12 of those.
Yeah, no doubt. I am so happy to see you.
Cool to be here, man. It's been a long time. I've not been on these airways in quite some time.
You're missed. You're missed.
You think?
Well, I miss you.
Well, that's different.
I mean, I saw you at Bears earlier, and that kind of held me over for a little while. But
gave you a taste.
Just
a
little
taste
bit.
Of Rosner.
Just a little bit. And then you're walking around here with your notepad in your back pocket like an old school scribe.
Well, that's what we do.
I know.
That's what we do. Yeah, we had the media function upstairs. Got myself some Joe. Got myself some Theo.
And?
A couple other guys that I won't tell you about.
Okay.
Because that's, you know, that's...
Can
that's,
I read about it at that, some point?
That's proprietary.
Okay, not
yeah,
a problem.
Yeah, you can read about it in the Daily Herald over the next few days.
A fine metropolitan newspaper. Good reporter there, too, and Bruce Miles. So, you're good.
Yeah, I'm hooked up. I got all I needed today. That's good. I won't be back this weekend.
I'm not surprised by that.
It's also going to snow like a ma, so I did it start yet?
No, the snowmageddon has not started, at least from when I walked into the convention.
Watch, we'll get like a dusting.
I would love that. I would really love it to just be a dusting.
That'd be okay with me, too.
Weren't you playing golf 2 weeks ago or something?
No.
I thought I saw that you went out and played. There was like a 50-degree day, and I was like, Rosner's playing golf. Maybe it's just in my mind.
No, I wish... I wish. I think about it a lot. It's kind of all I dream about. It sort of tells you, you know, you get to a point in your life where you stop dreaming about the things that you thought you should be dreaming about. I dream about golf. I dream about being in Florida playing golf. I think I should do that.
I think that that's a great dream.
Yeah, but it's just a dream.
That's all right. I mean, we all have to have something that we're going to try and shoot for.
Something to look for. Something to point toward. Something to keep us going. Something to keep us moving forward.
The people are here for you.
What do we got? I'm looking at the text screen
here.
We
should call it, it's an 80s porn movie, A Taste of Rosner.
There you go.
Starring Buzzed Berry.
With the picture of me and Greg Maddox, both of us in mustache, full porn mustache.
Oh, my God. Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I've told you this, but your episode of House of L, the podcast I do, remember that?
Yeah.
We sat down, we talked for like 90 minutes, and it was great.
Yeah.
People loved it.
We got to do another one. I mean, we didn't even get halfway.
We didn't get halfway. We didn't talk about reporting as much as we probably could, considering some of the reporting that's gone on over the last few weeks, and especially the last couple of days.
I tweeted and Facebook the famous 4 seconds from Jason Robards and All the President's Men, which I saw that you liked, where they're talking about Deep Throat, and he calls him Woodward's garage freak. And he says, garage freak? What kind of a crazy frickin' story is this? That's how I feel about what's going on with Manny Machado over the last week. We live in a very weird time, Lawrence, where journalism has been condensed down to a couple of hundred characters on Twitter, and it's really not journalism at all. It's really sort of humiliating for our business. What you have is a lot of people desperate to be out there first on Twitter, which really doesn't benefit anybody but Twitter. They don't make any money from that. I mean, maybe they, I suppose maybe you gain a few followers from that, and maybe that benefits you in some way long term. I kind of doubt it. I think what you're doing is you're helping Twitter. You're not helping sell your newspaper or your radio station or your whatever website you work for or whoever it is that employs you. I think it's a very bizarre time in which we live. And the rush to get out there causes a lot of people to be wrong all the time. And you get used by agents. You get used by team executives. You get used because you don't have the experience to understand when something is a fact and something is just put out there to help somebody else negotiate, whether it's from the team side or the player side. And it's kind of sad, but it just is where we is. Is where we is.
Buzzberry.
Yeah.
I'm sad about it, too. I don't understand. The thing that made me laugh the hardest, and Herbie and I were talking about it, the fact that there is a $75 million difference in what has been offered to Manny Machado. How wrong? Like, that is a big chasm that you are asking your Twitter followers or readers or listeners or viewers to go, oh, yeah, that totally makes sense. That one guy saying it's this, and another guy saying it's $75 million less.
Yeah, the thing is you have to know who you're dealing with. So when I was a beat guy, I had, and I still have relationships, including some of the people involved in all this. You have relationships with people, and you have to know who they are and how they play this game, and you have to know how you're being played. Sometimes you're not being played at all, but it depends on how well you know somebody and whether you believe they're actually telling you the truth. If you don't know someone well enough to know the difference, then what you're doing is irresponsible. It's not journalism. It's just throwing garbage on Twitter. And that's not journalism. When you know somebody really well, sometimes they'll tell you something and they'll say, look, you can't use this now. There may come a point where you can, but today you cannot. And you don't, because you don't betray that trust. In the meantime, you may be dealing with an agent who is merely trying to negotiate through the press, or in these days, through Twitter or through whatever social media platform that you use. And if you do that, not only do you lose all your credibility, but you cease to function as a journalist. And I think it's an awful place where we are. But it's not going away. It's not going to get better. It will only get worse. It just kind of is where we are. I can live with that, but I can't operate that way, and the people that I know who truly respect this profession aren't going to operate that way.
There's also an issue of a lack of consequence.
Well, there's no accountability, because if you don't, I mean, if you work for a newspaper, at least if you work for my newspaper, you better have two sources, and then you're going to have to discuss it with your editors, and you're going to have to explain to them, look, I'm not being played, and this is why. This is the way it is for these reasons. And they're still going to be skeptical. I mean, I can remember having these conversations 20, 30 years ago where they would say, but how do you know you're not being played? And I would vouch for a guy who I believed in, whether it was a team executive or the player himself or the agent. I would say, look, this is the story. These are the numbers. This is where it is. But you don't get a lot of second chances with those kind of things. If you get that wrong, then there goes your credibility, and you can no longer trust that agent or that player or that team executive. There's no accountability, though, because if you don't work for a newspaper, there aren't a lot of TV stations or radio stations or websites that are going to say you need two sources, or if you're wrong, then we're going to have to apologize for this and explain why we were wrong.
And perhaps you won't be on that beat anymore.
Well, it's just a different world that we're living in. I understand that, and I accept that, and that is the way it is, but it's just...
Does it mean that I'm old like you?
Yeah, you're old.
Oh, damn
you're
it.
Old. You're old. It's
what are you looking at?
I'm looking at the clock.
I'm in charge of the time. Yeah, Eli's not here.
Damn it, Eli. I can see. That was one of my one of the best parts about Hit and Run, especially last year. Me and Joe and Eli, we had such a great thing going, and everybody got beat up, and everybody had fun. But Eli with his clock, it's like there's a clock 15 feet away from me, and I can see it, and I know I'm late. And Eli's waving his arms.
Jumping up and down.
Jumping up and down and waving his arms. It's like, Eli, what is the hurry? What is the big hurry? Nobody sold the show. We got no spots. There's nowhere we got to be. You didn't book a guest. We didn't want a guest. We're in no damn hurry. What is your problem? What's... it's, you know, and I would always use the line from Good Will Hunting. Where we got to be, we can't spare 15 minutes. It's like, what's the big hurry?
So I had Joe on House of L this week.
Did you?
I did. It's a really good episode. I think you should listen.
I will.
And
for sure.
we talked about, and I said how much I felt like, and I told you this, I felt like Hit and Run was the best show on the score, mine included. And I loved it. At like 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, I found myself actively like, okay, I want to be in a space where I can listen to Rosner abuse poor Eli.
Wait a minute. Joe is worse than me.
Oh, the worst.
How do I get called out on that?
I mean, because you're not doing what he told you to do. And basically, I can't see into the studio from my house, but I know that you're basically giving him a middle finger. So for me, it's so great because I know how nervous Eli is and how
Eli.
Well he wants to do.
Such a good guy. Tries
because
so
he
hard.
Was my student.
Yeah.
So I know how much he wants to please. And you guys are just not giving him any opportunity to do that.
I'll be out for a run some days and I'll think of some of the things that happen and just start to laugh. I accidentally called him EY one day. You know how you're just doing stuff and you're talking fast. And I called him EY. From that point forward, he was EY. And I started.
He's Eric Young.
I started calling him Eric Young. Then I started calling him instead of EY. I called him E4 because that's what they called Eric Young in Colorado. They called him E4. So Eli, being the being the kid who's always trying so hard, he. During a break, runs to that back desk where he's trying to create sound, where he's trying to find a video, trying to find the right sound, trying to add something. He's always trying to add something to the show. So he finds an Eric Young highlight from while he was with the Cubs where he doubled in a couple runs. And we come back, and that's what he brings us back on the air with. And I'm laughing so hard that I can't talk coming out of the break. And I said, Eli, if you're going to do that, why didn't you find an Eric Young error somewhere? Because you're E4, you're EY. That was the whole point.
That's the bit.
And I find myself laughing sometimes at some of the stuff we did. But you said to me once you couldn't wait for the first segment because you knew stuff was going on off the air where somebody was getting trashed. Somebody. Probably everybody. It could have been any of the three of us or anybody else who works at the station.
Or any national baseball writer might get it, too.
And that first segment was always going to be hysterical because we were probably laughing coming out of the intro. Because something goofy was going on and we were ripping somebody. But we just had such a good time. I love that show so much.
Me, too.
It's been a hell of a 10 years at the score and on that show. We'll see what happens moving forward. But I would truly miss it. I really would. We had such a good time the last couple of years through all the partners. It was always fun. It was always a joy to do. Baseball's a love. I know how much you love baseball, which is probably why you're partial to the show. But... it's fun to see you, Lawrence. It looks like I'm looking at the clock. Looks
wait,
like
you just dropped your cigar.
So I got four more in the bag.
Well, I mean, it means it's time to go. Like, really? If you've dropped your cigar.
I hit it with the mic. Knocked it on the ground.
Well, it's always wonderful to see you, and you're always welcome here on my show.
You and I text a lot off the air. We communicate quite a bit. It's been really fun over the last 10 years to get to know you, become friends with you. Lawrence, it's good to see you, man.
Barry,
I love you.
You are the best, brother. You are the best.
See you soon.
That was Barry Rosner on with me. Yesterday, Robert Feeder had a piece. It was the lead piece in his column. You know, he does a media column about Barry and whether or not hit and run is back. Look, I don't have any inside information to share on any type of negotiation between the station and Barry and or Joe about hit and run. All I can tell you is if they want to be back, then I hope they come back. I don't want to push anyone. You know, sometimes like we hope stuff for other people that they might not necessarily want. But I will tell you that for someone who is a fan of Hit and Run, and like I'm like a crazy P1 listener to Hit and Run with Barry and Joe, if they want to continue doing the show, I think that we are better when we have them. But if they've chosen that they have taken things as far as they can go, I will understand that too. Barry's another one of those guys where his value goes far beyond what he does on the air versus the type of person that he is in the hallways here. And there have been a lot of guys over the last few years that when they leave, their presence, their lack of presence is felt. And Barry would be one of those guys. So whatever it is that he ends up doing, I want him to be happy first and foremost because I adore him. Like I love Barry. Like he's been so great to me. Whether I was out in the field covering the Bears or doing this for a living, he's been incredible to me, which is why there would be times where I would pop up on Hit and Run because Joe was sick or Spiegs were out or any of one of the other hosts. And like, I'd just come in and do it for free. Like a lot of times, like you, if Mitch were to ask me to work like an extra shift, like there would be something in it for me. Like I'm going to pay you or I'm going to give you a comp day. Barry could call me at 8:30 and be like, hey, Maddie's sick. Can you come in here and host with me? And I'd be like, I'll be right down. Because that's the type of dude that he is. So I'm glad that he and I got a chance to talk and we got to be on air. And I know that people like, I joke about being the people's champ. And I know to a certain extent I am. But Barry, like the effect that people love him for good reason. They love him. Same reason I probably love him too. So whatever he wants, whatever Joe wants, I want that for them. I also know that the Hit and Run will exist in some form. And it'll be great. It'll be different, but it'll be great. But if those guys want to come back, I would be the leading cheerleader in them coming back. So I just thought I'd share because I know a lot of people hit me up when they saw the feeder thing and were like, wait, what? And I was like, well, I had Barry on, so you can hear what he had to say about a lot of stuff. And I think that he is a valuable resource. He has been a valuable resource to this radio station. I hope if he wants it, that it continues. And if not, I wish him well, and whatever he needs, I will be there. Back after this on The Score. The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets are on sale now at NUSports.com. And if you're the sixth caller, wait, we're giving away Bulls tickets? All right. If you're the sixth caller to the Scores contest line, 312-591-6700, we're going to hook you up for a pair of tickets to see the Bulls take on Cleveland Sunday, January 27th. So this Sunday, there's no football on other than the Pro Bowl. You can go. Look, everything other than the basketball is great. You'll have a good time. I've never gone to a Bulls game and not had a good time. I just wish the basketball was better, which is what we talked about in the first hour. But you should go to the game. Check out my man Roman, my girl Courtney. They do all the in-stadium stuff. They do a tremendous job. DJ AMPM, she does a tremendous job. Anyway. So, yeah, go see the Bulls. This Hall of Fame thing. I have some feelings. Just a couple. Joe Cowley set me straight a few years ago. I remember we were talking baseball. I must have been sitting in with Spiegs, and we were talking about the Hall of Fame. And he's like, it's a museum. And ever since he said that, I mean, I know that it's a museum, but ever since he said that, like, something resonated with me. And I try not to get too mad about who gets in to the Hall of Fame. But what I will get mad at, or not mad, but just what I think is interesting, is this idea of people are not allowed to be 100% on the vote. That Mariano Rivera gets 100% of the vote and Ken Griffey Jr. doesn't. Like, who's the person that keeps him off the ballot? Like, what's your argument? That you were trying to keep someone else on the ballot and you knew that Ken Griffey Jr. was going to... Like, it's so stupid. Like, why have a vote? If the vote is going to... Like, you're not actually voting for the person that you think belongs in the Hall of Fame, but for you're doing favors for people that you know aren't going in, or so. Shout out to our guy Eugene though, from It's the Bigs. He's now a Hall of Fame voter, baby.
He says he's got to wait 4 years to actually vote.
That's okay.
He got it,
my man. I'm going to do something with him on House of L. I haven't figured out quite what yet, but something. There's a part of me that's like, just put them on and let them do their thing. Like, get out of the way, give them the episode, and just move out the way. Does that make sense, Tony?
Yeah, you got to let those dudes rock.
Yeah, because they do, like, their brand of sports talk is a little different, and it's got some edge to it. That maybe a podcast is like the only thing that can hold those dudes.
I'm surprised they don't have their, like.
They should have one. I talked to him and Terrence about that. They should absolutely have one.
It would fit them so perfectly.
But maybe, like, I'll give them the opportunity to jumpstart the podcast on House of L, and they can go, hey, this was fun. Now we can do our own thing with our own platform. Or they can stay on mine. I do technically own a media company now. Tony knows. He got a check from House of L.
House of L for life.
Consultant. That's right. We're doing big things in 2019, I hope. Going over 200,000 downloads, which is great. There's some great episodes that you should catch up on. Oh, tomorrow's episode that's going to drop tomorrow morning, Tony Andracki from NBC Sports Chicago, who covers the Cubs. We had a great conversation. I think that you'll dig it. If you search House of L on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Spotify, just search those. You'll find it. If you're on iTunes, if you could give us a 5-star rating, if you think we've earned it, and a great review, that would be awesome as well. So that's my commercial for House of L. It's a really good podcast. I talk with a lot of cool people in Chicago journalism about how they do their thug thizzle. It's pretty good. Guests like Sarah Spain, Kelly Krall. I was going back through the numbers. Like, that Kelly Krall episode did really well. She was great, and the episode was amazing. Last week, I had Joe on the podcast, and Joe shut it down. I ordinarily don't like to go as long on episodes as I did on the Joe one, but it's really good, and I think it's worth your time. And I actually think, after hearing the interview I did on The Score with Barry, you should probably go and listen to my interview with Joe on House of L. Just a little tip from me to you. Yes, the music sounds so good right now. That is DePaul's fight song. We talk with Dave Leto every week. DePaul is getting ready for a major matchup. And we're going to talk about that. Longtime rival. Marquette. I hate Marquette more than any other team that DePaul plays. Like any other rivalry. Like even the historic ones. Like even if you're talking about DePaul, Notre Dame. Back in the day when DePaul was in the great Midwest with Cincinnati, I hated them. Bobby Bostic and all those guys. Curtis Bostic and Bobby Brannan. All those guys. Marquette is the team that I hate the most. And that's who's next up for the Blue Demons. They travel up to Milwaukee to take on Marquette. Dave Leto now joins me here on The Score. The 11-6, 3-3 Demons, 500 in the Big East. Dave, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Lunch. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. DePaul has won 3 out of their last 4 games in the Big East. Why do you think that's happening?
Trying to develop chemistry, man, and understanding, you know, on both ends of the court how we have to be connected. And, you know, I think what we talked about throughout the season thus far, especially, you know, on your show, is how we can maximize ourselves. And offensively, we spread the ball around, and it's not just one person, but it's a group of people contributing, whether it's scoring or rebounding or moving the ball around, so we can keep the defense a little bit off balance that way. You know, we've developed pretty good low post game, and defensively, you know, we still got a long way to go. When we need to tighten up, we haven't been able to do that. And so, like everybody else, we're still a work in progress, but we've got some signs of something that we can build on.
Perfect night, like Saturday night. You know, you don't have to worry about the NFL. I'm watching DePaul take on Seton Hall in New Jersey. The whole thing was great. You know, former DePaul standout Sarah Kustak was on the call on the TV version, and I saw some cool stuff. Like watching Paul Reed, who made the Big East Honor Roll this week. And you know, I have been very high. Like, I bought the Paul Reed stock low. So I'm very excited to see my man Paul Reed doing what he did. 21 points and 14 rebounds in that game. And also made one shot that I was like, he can make that shot? I was very impressed with the way that he played and how he kind of tried to take the game over. How have you seen him develop into that type of player?
Yeah, and you must be talking about the turnaround, 1-foot fadeaway, yeah. Dirk Nowitzki type shot at the end of the shot clock. Yeah, so Paul's a guy, and obviously, you know, last year we talked a lot about him, and what you saw was, you know, some other people who are big fans of him saw is there's a ton of potential. And now, you know, he's beginning to realize some of that potential. He's growing and learning daily in the game, which I think was the biggest change that we see in him is confidence, that he believes so much more in not only himself, but what we're doing and how he can fit into what we're doing. And, you know, he's always been a really, really natural rebounder. So his nose for the ball, particularly on the offensive backboards, is uncanny. His long arms, and I think, and I've told him this before, he's got about as good a set of hands and touch in traffic in and around the basket as you're going to see in a long while. So, you know, he's still a babe in the woods. He's got, you know, he's got to get stronger, and he's still growing and learning, and I think the best is absolutely yet to come.
It's funny because there were moments in the game where you're almost watching him go, oh yeah, I could just take the ball away if I wanted to. And like that, like seeing that level of maturation of him understanding some of the positioning that he has when he's trying to rebound is a really cool thing to see.
Yeah, and you know, and we've been through it ourselves where, you know, scout report says, hey, you got to keep this guy off the glass. And I'm sure that's what they say, you know, when preparing for us, but it's easier said than done. And he's a guy that has a knack and a nose to get to where he wants to go, follow shots. And he came up big in the Seton Hall game, and not only just getting those rebounds, but the timeliness of them right when we needed the most, or to stem a tide and what they were doing on their end of the floor. So, you know, he's grown. He's been inserted into the starting lineup when we had the injury. And from my estimation, he'll never look back. I think the best, as I said, is in front of him. And I kind of think he knows that. Even, you know, he leads the Big East in free throw shooting percentage for Big East games. And, you know, he started out the season in the mid to low, or low to mid 60s, and he's at about 95% right now. So it just, you know, goes to show you his maturation process and what we see in front of us.
The team as a whole, you know, shot, what, 90% from the line, 91% from the line in that game. I know that it's one of those things that coaches try to emphasize But when you see your guys step up and make free throws, especially at the end of games that another team is trying to extend, how does that make you feel about where your team is at?
Well, it tells me about our focus. And I've said this, you know, all along, and I think we were underachieving and have been underachieving at the free throw line. And as we play with really good rhythm, we make free throws. As we're a little bit off balance, you know, we tend to miss more free throws than we should. And so we've been hovering right around that 70% mark all year. But, you know, in a game like Saturday night, when most things were going pretty well for us, we were scoring, you know, with some ease. We didn't play the kind of defense, particularly in the first half, that we needed to. And overall, we gave up, you know, too many points and too much of a high percentage. But at the same point in time, we had good rhythm. And that meant when we went to the line, we went there confidently. We know we had earned those two free throws, and then we were able to make them. So particularly end of the game, I think we're at 10-10 right down the stretch. And so that became really important in that game and as we continue to move forward.
Speaking of 10-10, that's what Femi did from the line in the game. How much does it change the way you can coach offensively when one of your bigs, you're almost certain that he's going to make his free throws at the end of the game?
It's really, really important, Lawrence, because I think that's one of the things big guys don't do as well as perimeter people is shoot free throws. But Femi's 10-10 and Paul's, I think he was 6-6, you know, or at least 4-4. It means that, you know, they earn everything they get. So when you're playing against them, you can't foul them because it's as good as a basket. And that sits in the back of your mind, whether you're preparing or in real time. And so, you know, there are those guys that are real strong, big, they perform well, but then they get fouled and, you know, they're going to make, you know, 6 out of every 10. And so that becomes a little bit disheartening because you waste a real quality possession by not getting 2 points out of it. And one of the things that we need to do is continue to manufacture points in that way because we don't make as many three-pointers as the other teams do sometimes. So we've got to kind of keep the game at bay in a certain kind of way so we can get and-ones down low and get a three-point play that way, or the game will stop and we'll be able to make free throws. So we're just hoping that it continues.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. 6 made threes, but 97 points. That's a weird like counterbalance. Like people don't ordinarily see that type of point swing without the 3 points being involved in this. So one of the things I saw, and if I'm overreaching, I'm overreaching. It feels like in watching your team that now there is a level of trust that it doesn't have to be one or two guys. Like when I look at Saturday's game and see that Eli Kane shot the ball 6 times in the game. He's a guy that shoots a lot more or has in the past shot a lot more than that. And I feel like he could do other stuff and you don't need him to be a volume scorer for you to win.
Yeah, and one of the things that was going on this last game was he started out very well and he ended up with 14 points. So, you know, he was a little bit ineffective in the second part of the second half because he sprained his ankle. So credit to him, he played through it and became more of a decoy than anything. But as you use that word trust and as our guys figure out, and they already have, if we're running a set or we're doing something and we don't get what we want, hey, let's just throw that thing inside and see what happens. And you know, oftentimes we were able to score. So a lot of times we get one-on-one attention. And what's going to happen as we get more crowded down low is that ball will come back out. Now Eli, Max, and guys in the perimeter will be freed up to make more plays. And so having that balance is really critical for us. And as the season grows old, you know, and I think it happened a little bit seeing Hall where Max, you know, 22 points and the 3-pointers that he made was in concert with the ball going down low. And so that kind of balance is going to be really, really important for us moving forward.
Dave, hang on. There's more stuff that I want to talk to you about, including the matchup with Marquette and trying to stop Marcus Howard, who is making a run for player of the year in the country. He's been that good. The Blue Demons are 11-6, 3-3. So this is a pretty happy Dave Lato show. If you want to talk with Dave, 312-644-6767 is the number. You can text a question in at 670-11. More with Dave after a quick timeout. You're listening to The Score. In the middle of a conversation with Dave Lato, the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons. Blue Demons are 11-6, 3-3 in the Big East. Tomorrow they play Marquette in Milwaukee in the new building. That game's at 7:30 if you're looking for something to do tomorrow night. Game will be on FS1 on television, and it will be on 560 WIND tomorrow night if you want to listen to our buddy Zach Zaidman be on the call. That's because the Bulls will be on here tomorrow taking on the Atlanta Hawks. All right, Dave, let's talk about Marcus Howard. And this guy is averaging 24 points a game. I think that he's making a run to be player of the year. When he showed up in 2016, you already knew that the guy was special. He's taken his game to a new level this year with some incredible performances. How do you try and slow him down, realizing that he's not the only thing that Marquette has? I mean, that's why they're the number 12 team in the country.
Yeah, the first thing is you got to drink a lot of coffee and get no sleep.
For sure.
You know, just trying to figure out schemes and different things that you could do to try to keep him off balance. And, you know, we've had our run where, you know, the first was preparing for Shamari Pons, and unfortunately, you know, he wasn't able to play. He had back spasms, and, you know, after that, it became Miles Powell and trying to figure out, you know, what to do with him. And then Kamar Baldwin, and now Marcus Howard, who from a scoring standpoint is the best of all of them. And so it's really a testament to what's going on in this league and the tremendous, you know, players we have, and especially in the backcourt. And so, you know, I think he's a guy that really keeps you off balance. He can shoot the ball so well, going to his right, going to his left, standing still, stepping back in transition and off pick and roll and all those kind of things. So you really, really got to not only be tight in your coverages, but you got to have, you know, an extra set of eyes on him at all times. And the problem is when you do that, then the other guys get unleashed. And, you know, both the Hauser brothers, were and it's the first time I remember ever something happening like this, where one is player of the week, the other is freshman of the week. And so those guys are rounding into shape, and Sakara Annam and the rest of the guys that they have are real dangerous. And so you've got to have great balance in your defensive coverages, but when you do that, it frees him up. So you almost have to sometimes pick your poison.
You said, I saw a story on ESPN, a quote where you said that we're at the most important stage of our program in that we're figuring out how to win, particularly late game situations. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, if you watch teams across the country, particularly in this league, for those teams that have won, and just watching Villanova play at Butler tonight, and there's a mindset that they play with, particularly, you know, in this case, on the road, late game, up six, down six, whatever the score may be, there's absolutely no panic, which leads to proper execution. There's little mistakes made on the defensive end. There's coverages, there's rebounding. And so you tend to make more plays because your execution is sharp because, as I said, there's no panic. You've been there in that situation many, many times before. For where we're at right now, we're in the process of understanding what that means. And so, as I've said to you plenty of times, you know, a lot of times we're beating or trying to be programs as opposed to teams and players. And so part of becoming a real good program is when you have those games, and we're going to continue to be a very close, you know, tightly contested contest, that making those plays not only are critical but become important, not just for that one game but for the program as well.
It's interesting timing on how things have started to come together a little bit, and you're seeing success on the court because of the success that you're having off the court. And for fans who don't quite know, can you run through some of the guys that are going to be joining DePaul, whether via transfer or recruits that have signed on?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you asking. So right now we just added a third, so we have three guys who are sitting out. You know, John Diener came to us as a freshman and decided to redshirt him just to get him a little bit more seasoned and more acclimated, get him stronger, more confident. But he will add, you know, a tremendous shooter to our lineup, someone that can really stretch the floor. So we're happy to have him. And Darius Hall is a guy that came over from Arkansas who's had a tremendous impact in our program, not just because he's a high-level player, but he's both athletic and maybe the most athletic guy that we have on the floor along with Max, and then a high, high energy guy who's never had a down day. He plays hard. He lifts the spirit in our gym and will be a tremendous addition, especially in the full court for us. for us, excuse me. And then Cartier Gordon, who just came in about a week ago, he's still getting acclimated, but is a high-level talent, a guy that can play with his back to the basket at 6'9", 230, plays with a ton of energy, doesn't mind getting dirty out there and you know, coming at you, and plays as hard as Day-Day does, but has a skill package to go along with. So those three guys will really add to us because they've been with us for a while, so we can count on them a little bit more. And then the three freshmen that we signed, I'm really, really happy about. Oscar Lopez, who's a multi-dimensional guard from out in California, who's having a tremendous senior year as a guard, both point and off guard, can shoot it, handle it, great decision maker. Marquise Jacobs, who, you know, is Chicago's best player thus far, in my opinion, this season, who's a 5'10 dynamo in the mold of Nate Robinson, who can shoot it. He's very athletic. We'll add a spirit and an energy that we need. And then Romeo Weems, who will be, in all likelihood, Mr. Basketball in the state of Michigan, who, you know, a top 30 type player who will be multidimensional, can shoot it, handle it, play down low, rebounds. As I've said before, more of a five tool, to steal a baseball term, kind of player. And so those six right now will add to, you know, I think what will be the momentum that we're trying to create and have created on the floor, to put ourselves in a position to compete with the other teams on a night in and night out basis in the Big East.
And Cartier, he'll be, because of DePaul's quarter system, he gets to play in at the end of November, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, one of the advantages that we have because of the quarter system is that we finish before Thanksgiving. And once we finish and grades are, you know, done, tests are completed, then he'll become eligible. And I'm not completed with the schedule that next year, but somewhere in and around four games is what he may miss, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, which is a major advantage because essentially he'll get a chance to play the whole year.
Okay, that's great. That is wonderful news. I do wonder if around campus, has the buzz started yet? Are people starting to get excited? Maybe people that would ordinarily like leave you alone because the season was going rough are now saying, "Hi, Dave, how are things going?"
Well, you know, everybody likes a winner, Lawrence, and so there's an added buzz that I haven't felt in a while, and I understand, you know, it comes with how your program is moving forward, and it has to happen on the court. And we still want to win a whole lot more to start to convince more and more people that we're an exciting brand of basketball. And you know, I've maintained this the whole time: you build it, and they will come. And we've taken our time, try to do things the right way. And not shortchange ourselves, because I don't want this to last for one game or one season. I want this to be longstanding, so everybody that has anything to do with DePaul can return back to the kind of pride that we deserve to give our fans. So we're going to keep working at it. You know, we're going to keep climbing ever so slowly. There's going to be good days, bad days along the way, but at the end, I think everybody will be proud of what we'll become.
Yeah, but I imagine that being third in the Big East right now feels pretty good.
Well, you know, we're one game away from greatness and one game away from sorrow, too. That's what the league has to offer. So we just take it one day at a time, but happy right now where we're at, but certainly not satisfied.
Dave, thanks for the time. Good luck against Marquette tomorrow.
As always, my man. Appreciate you.
That's Dave Lato, the head coach of the Blue Demons. I'm kind of excited. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of excited. Now, I know tomorrow's going to be rough. Marquette's no joke. Like, that could legitimately be a Final Four team that DePaul's playing tomorrow.
Yeah, they got a lottery pick on that team.
Yeah. It's a good squad. Marcus Howard is a nightmare. And those Hauser boys can ball. It would be so, like, if DePaul wins tomorrow, now we start talking about resume wins. Like, that's where, like, think about that for a second. If DePaul beats Marquette tomorrow, we now go, we could add that to their win over number 24 St. John's on the road and go, resume win.
Best basketball team in the state.
I said that 2 weeks ago and people got mad at me. I stand by it. That's scary.
Up until Dave and them cooking with gas. You saw them, heard those people he listed off as yep. People coming in next year?
There are some people I've seen DePaul's recruiting class rated as high as like 15th in the nation for next year. I'm not going to put it on them to win tomorrow. If they do, I'll be ecstatic, and I'll make sure that Panther has a camera on me. If not, you don't want to see, maybe you do want to see what I'm like when DePaul loses. There's a lot of words that go with M and F. Like, I'd be down in the basement screaming and throwing stuff. I also am down in the basement throwing and screaming and stuff when they win big games. So, here's hoping that they can win tomorrow. That would be dope. But they have won 3 out of their last 4 in the Big East. 11-6, 3-3. Northern get a big win tonight. So the Northern people mad as hell.
Beat number 14 Buffalo.
That Buffalo team's real good.
They're old.
Buffalo?
They got a bunch of like fifth year seniors on that team.
That's what you need to win in college basketball. If you're not getting lottery pick dudes, like you can't be Buffalo and then, you know what I'm saying? Like,
but it's like, it's a bunch of actually fully grown men.
Yeah, but you can't, Tony, you can't be Buffalo and be like, oh, we got a whole bunch of, we got big talent that want to come spend winters in places where you get 40 inches of snow. No one's going there. Y'all still 11-8 and you play in the MAC, so I don't want to hear it. Don't be telling me that you're, hi, Mark Grody. Hey!
The House of Hell is alive.
It is. Yes. You're on tonight.
I'm on tonight. Julie's sick.
Julie is sick. Yeah. She's had some stuff going on.
I hope she got stuff going on.
Yeah, she got the goop, as Uncle Terry would say. We've all had the goop here. It was just a matter of time before someone got Julie.
Okay.
Like, I had the goop. Mac had the goop. Everyone had the goop. Yeah. Yeah. So Mark Grody is going to be on tonight between 10 and midnight. And I got a feeling he's going to talk Bears. Yeah. Hey, no, I don't want to hear your mouth. You lost to Northern Kentucky. So, yeah, you got a big win tonight. But step off. Quit trying to ruin this for me. DePaul's actually good right now. So shut up. Groats is next. Bears.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway.
Peace out. We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.